there's no place like home for the holidays. And no matter how far away you roam, if you pine for the sunshine of a friendly gaze, for the holidays you can.
Welcome back to another episode of Horror for the Holidays. I'm Jay Logsdon. Oh, fuck. God damn it. We'll start again here.
This is all staying in, by the way.
Yeah, it is now.
Oh, shit. Oh, we're starting the countdown again, Jay.
Welcome back to Horror for the Holidays, a Christmas horror movie podcast. I'm Jay Logsdon.
And I'm Jeff Searcy.
Oh, God. Jeff, when did you become an angry British man?
I'm Simon Phillips, actually. Jay got me here to be interviewed about this great film.
I mean, it is a great film.
I'll tell you, Jay, I won't be satisfied with this film franchise until I have four films.
Four films isn't enough for one franchise.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Well, before we get into the meat of it, as followers of us on social media know, I went to Colorado and got up to some shenanigans.
Indeed.
And while I was there, I got something for you, Jeff.
Oh, boy.
Something very special. I bought it at the Horrid store in Colorado. It's a little horror shop.
Well, my wife says I will like it, but she wouldn't tell me what it is.
Oh, you're going to, I think you're going to love it.
Oh, my God. It's an M3gen.
It's an M3gen magnet, and she's doing the little dance.
Oh, my God. I didn't even know I needed this.
As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, I gotta get that for Jeff.
You know me so well, Jay.
Literally, it was sitting there. I'm like, Jeff has to have an M3gen magnet.
I mean, this is going right next to my signed Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 Garbage Day magnet.
She's literally doing like the little like leg up on the wall, oh, like posing against it.
This is amazing. I didn't even know such a thing existed.
I think it was handmade by somebody. Oh, and like, it's just what, as soon as I saw it, I was just like, yes, nope, yeah.
Well, thank you, sir.
You're welcome, buddy. Well, anyway, let's get back on track. Let's get into it. Let's talk about 2019, 2020s,
The
Nights Before Christmas.
The Nights Before Christmas.
The Nights Before Christmas, Mrs. Claus.
I have released December 6th, 2020.
That is what I found as well, although it seems like it might have made the rounds at the film festivals the winter before that, and then it just had a delay because they couldn't find a distributor.
Because I have a lot of stuff that says, like on both Peacock and Tubi, it has the release date as 2019.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm like, everything I saw said 2020.
As far as I know, from what I could find, it was not available to the general public until 2020.
And this is the sequel to one of, maybe not one of the hidden gems, because I'd already known about it, but one of the movies that we've really enjoyed on this podcast, Once Upon a Time at Christmas.
It was definitely a hidden gem for me. As we've talked about before, I still reference Four Birds constantly.
Like, I don't know if I said it on the podcast. I know I said it to you at one point. There's that thing about, like, oh, guys think about the Roman Empire all the time, mm-hmm. or at least once a day. And I'm like, I don't think about the Roman Empire once a day, but I do think about Once Upon a Time at Christmas and The Nights Before Christmas at least once a day.
Yes. I mean, I don't... There's no movie franchise I think we've done so far yet that has maintained such a good level of quality between the first and the second movie.
Exactly. That is. I know I said that on the stocking stuffer our last stocking stuffer episode. Somehow this movie is both better and worse than the original movie, which is impressive.
Indeed.
Directed by Paul Tanter again. Written by Paul Tanter and Simon Phillips again.
Always good to have the lead actor in on the writing.
Simon Phillips also resumes his role as Santa / Nick Conway, or as I referred to him on the first Fuck, Mary Killmas, Ian something.
Actually, Jay, how were they changed his name to Nicholas for this movie to make it a more interesting reference to Santa Claus?
No, his name was Nick in the first movie.
Exactly.
I was just fucking stupid and couldn't remember what his name was.
Yes, well, don't you're in good company, Jay, because all of Reddit is also stupid.
But yeah, where I got Ian from, I will never know. Selah DeGode is once again Mrs. Claus. And lastly, returning from the first film, is Barry Kennedy playing former Sheriff Mitchell.
It's me, Sheriff Mitchell. Just call me Mitchell.
This time we have Keegan Chambers playing Courtney, not Susanna Mackey. And we have Shannon Cotter playing Nick's daughter, Jennifer, who in the previous film was Laurel Brady. I don't, you know, I just assume couldn't get them back or didn't want to come back.
They didn't want to come back, yeah, but I mean, it didn't make a whole lot of difference, so.
IMDb reported budget of $1.5 million.
That's what I found, too. That included the marketing budget, though. The actual production budget, I think, was around $1 million, like the first one.
Currently streaming Peacock, Tubi, Roku, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Personal experience, Jeff?
After we watched the first one, you were like, if you like this one, there's a sequel that we'll land on eventually. And I've been waiting for that ever since.
I had watched the first one and I was scrolling Tubi and the image for the second movie popped up. And I'm like, for this one, for Once Upon a Time, I was like, wait, we already watched that movie, but it was called Once Upon a Time at Christmas. And so I clicked on it and I'm like, oh my God, this is a different movie. And so I made my wife watch it, like, that night, which I think was July 4th.
Nice.
So, yeah, that tells you how excited I was to watch the sequel to the amazing Once Upon a Time at Christmas.
You know, something I really appreciated, Jay, they cranked up Santa's Christmas puns this time.
Yep. Also, it needs to be said, there is that Indiegogo that I'm still waiting to get finished for the third movie.
Yes. I still have faith. I think it's going to come out next year.
Oh, that'd be great. I mean, otherwise I threw $100 away on a complete collection of all three movies.
No.
Which, I mean, it's $100. Like, yeah, that sucks. But also, like, more importantly, it sucks that we might not get a third one.
I mean, we have to, you heard Simon Phillips at the beginning. We're getting four movies, Jay.
It is enough for one franchise.
If it takes another 20 years.
Also, I think, like I said, for personal experience, literally my reaction was, they made another one?
Yep. Also, did you know that there's a large segment of people who say that the first one is complete trash and not worth watching?
I'm not surprised. I think a lot of people.
I kept running into that, but it's like because these people are like, I'm a Christmas horror fan, but. And I'm like, if you're a Christmas horror fan, then how can you not like Once Upon a Time at Christmas?
No, they're so goofy. Like,
I mean, I don't understand.
How you can be a Christmas horror fan with like all the like Silent Night, Deadly Night movies, yes, beyond the first one. But then be like, no, Once Upon a Time at Christmas / The Nights Before Christmas is where I draw the line.
And the people are saying somehow this one is worse. You have people saying Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 is a great movie, but this is a terrible sequel, Jay.
I mean, those are both wrong. Oh, Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 is a great movie. but this is also a great movie.
Well, that I had to say something at that point. I just posted, oh yeah, Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, the famous movie that's half the first movie again.
as someone I follow once said, like, you know, how can you like Silent Night, Deadly Night and hate Silent Night, Deadly Night 2? You at least have to like half of it.
Exactly. But yes, a lot of hate for this franchise, but especially this movie in particular.
Well, it's weird, but I guess we can get into it, right?
Yeah, I mean, we might as well start discussing this.
We get a cry-on on the screen that says, 4 years ago.
Yes.
Great start.
Always good to have a flashback at the beginning, Jay.
We see a guy in a mental hospital. He's a doctor. He's in a straight jacket, like being restrained in a chair, and he's taunted by Santa and Mrs. Claus. People are screaming in the background. Santa and Mrs. Claus have murdered all the staff, slitting throats. They rounded up a bunch of them and burned them alive with gasoline.
And somehow Santa also got burned because the doctor's like, Nick, what happened to your face?
But we don't see it happen, but I assume it's from the throwing all the gasoline around the fucking building.
I think so. He probably ended up with some on his own clothes, which, I mean, he is insane, so that's not beyond the realm of possibility.
Santa tells the doctor to say his name because he keeps calling him Nick. And he's like, that's not my name. Say my name. And then the doctor starts screaming, Santa Claus, Santa Claus, you're Santa Claus. Title card, The Nights Before Christmas.
Oh. And we got Mrs. Claus. Oh, J-Lox.
Oh, the fuck was that?
J-Lox is knocking things over.
I don't even know what that was.
I don't know. It was on your left side.
Who knows?
Oh, well, that mystery will be solved another time.
It was the ghost of something bad that we're talking about once upon it, or the nights before Christmas.
It's the ghost of future past, Jay. It made X-Men Days of Future Past, and it wants us to talk about that franchise.
Oh, I refuse. All right, we're gonna talk a little bit about the MCU during our Garbage Day segment. So something to look forward to.
Also, Mrs. Claus is back doing her middle-of-the-road Harley Quinn impression.
Yep.
Which, I mean, I know some people are like, oh, whatever, cringe. I'm like, I don't know, I thought she does a pretty good Harley Quinn.
It's not bad. I don't think it's her fault that it's you know, I mean, Mrs. Claus via Harley Quinn.
I think it's an intentional reference to the Joker-Harley Quinn thing.
Yep.
Although, I gotta say, Santa's a much more intimidating psychopath than the Joker has ever been.
Yep. So anyway, present day, we get B-roll footage of New York City with like snow falling around it and an instrumental of Oh Come All Ye Faithful.
I really like that opening drone shot of the Statue of Liberty with that music over it.
I thought that was great. We then cut to a diner very decked out for Christmas. There's a bunch of patrons. There's like a guy dressed as Santa Claus who's harassing people.
Obviously drunk.
Yep. There's some cops that are, you know, being cops and
eating their shift meal, questioning people.
Yeah. You know, eating their donuts, drinking their coffee. Oink, 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 piggy. And then there's a girl sitting at a booth. She orders a cup of coffee from the waitress. And then the waitress is like, anything else? And then a guy walks up behind her and he's like, make that two. And she's like, Dad, what are you doing here? Turns out this is Jennifer from the, or no, this is Courtney from the first movie. God damn it, I did it again.
Jay Logsdon has face blindness. She'll have to forgive him.
I told Jeff this. I spent like 20 minutes trying to figure out which girl, not like which girl was which, but which girl was Jennifer and which girl was Courtney from the first movie. And finally, I just went back to my notes from the first movie and I was like, okay, Jennifer's Nick's daughter and Courtney is the friend.
Yes.
Because I'm sitting there and I'm like, that can't be Nick's daughter. And I'm like, because Nick killed her stepdad.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm just racking my brain. And finally, I'm like, oh, that's the friend. So her dad convinces her to come, or talks to her about, you know, coming home for Christmas. Her mom misses her. You know, the events of 1 year ago.
Yes, have really scarred her.
Yep, you really need to get over, you know, the murder of 30 plus people in our small town 1 year ago at Christmas time.
Well, you know, it all could have been prevented, Jay, if the sheriff had known what fruits look like.
Oh, man. Well, and if for whatever reason, they will go to that sheriff and ask him for help to solve the murders this time.
Yep.
You know, you really want to talk to the guy who didn't know what a pear was.
But yeah, she's like, no, I'm never going back there. But if you guys want to come to my apartment for Christmas, go ahead.
Yep. So she gives him her address and her dad leaves.
Oh, yeah. She also gets called out for charging way too much on her credit card.
Yep. her dad drives down an empty stretch of New York roads listening to Angels We Have Heard on High when the radio starts to go like staticky and start messing around. He's fiddling with the radio. He then looks up and sees Santa standing in the street and he swerves to avoid it crashing into a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of sitting there. You're like, okay, was he imagining it? Because we know that Courtney like had a kind of imagined seeing him in the diner at one point.
Yeah. She gave the drunk Santa some money for the kids. And then he's like, he made it clear that he's not actually giving that money to kids. He's going to buy booze with it.
Yep.
But yeah. And then he morphs into Nick.
And so she kind of like runs out and then the drunk Santa's like, I didn't touch her.
I didn't touch her, I swear, to the cops. Yeah.
So the her dad, Courtney's dad's kind of like looking around, like, you know, what's going on? And then Santa appears behind him, smashes his window open, and chases him. And he, you know, he starts running, and then gets hit in the backs with a thrown axe.
Mm-hmm.
Falls to the ground. Santa then kind of talks to him. His name's Jim, we learn, and he talks to him for a bit, and like they know each other.
Yes, it's very clear they know each other. He says he's not going to give up his daughter's location, and he eats the piece of paper with her address on it. So that's a shot for him to pull that out of his pocket.
And then Santa's like, "Well, besides Christmas, there's one other thing that brings families together, a funeral." And then he axes him in the head.
Yeah. I liked his line, too. He's like, "Well, then, we're at an impasse, because you won't give up your daughter, but I have a list."
The next morning, the FBI shows up to investigate the death, and the local PD thinks that he was drunk, even though there is clearly an axe gash in his forehead.
Well, and his back wound from getting hit in the back while he was running away.
Never mind that there's also, like, one of the thrown axes is embedded in a tree.
Well, and not to mention the fact that the swerving pattern obviously would indicate to a trained investigator that he braked because he saw something in the road, and that he has no windshield damage going outward. His windshield was smashed in.
And there are multiple sets of footprints on the ground.
Because their theory was he was thrown from the car, except obviously the windshield was smashed in, not out. You can see it on the vehicle. And, the FBI is like, "Where's his cell phone?" And the guy's like, "Cell phone?" It's like, yeah, if he died out here alone, he would have his phone on him.
And
so we could see why these guys wouldn't know an apple from a pear.
And they're like, "Oh," and at one point the cops are like, "Why is the FBI here?" Which I guess is a good question if you think it's a drunk driving thing. And then it's like, "Well, this is a guy who was killed at Christmas from that small town of Woodridge where there was a deranged on the loose serial killer dressed as Santa Claus who has a connection to the girl from the first movie." That's the reason why we're here.
Well, and you know, at the beginning, they don't even just say why is the FBI here. These local donut munchers are like, "The feds always trying to horn in on local action." It's like, yeah, because you're a bunch of idiots.
We cut to Courtney talking to her therapist, who spends the whole time while they're talking, looking at Santa's like case file from the mental hospital at the beginning of the movie, and then we flash back to there with her interacting with him.
Oh, you gotta tell him about the naughty in the snow, Jay.
Yeah, back at the crime scene, the FBI finds the word "naughty" written in the snow in blood. And you know, I think this is when they find the axe, and they're like, "You guys didn't look beyond just his dead body." They're like, "Well, we thought he was drunk."
Yeah. Which also, I know that, you know, they might be a little bit beyond, but they can do a sobriety test. You think they could have the medical examiner test his blood to see what his blood alcohol was?
No, instead, Santa poured alcohol all over him.
So he just smells like alcohol. They never actually confirmed with a blood test that he had alcohol in his system.
They just assume. We learned that Jennifer and her mother are placed in witness protection to avoid getting hunted down by Santa again.
Mm-hmm.
Back at the therapist's house, she gets a message on her answering machine from Mrs. Claus, where it's basically like, "I'm coming to see ya. Maybe I'm already there right now." And like, and so she's listening to this and she closes the fridge. You think like, oh, there's going to be someone standing on the other side of the fridge. There's not. And then Mrs. Claus is standing behind her.
Yes, that I like that, doing the double fake out.
Mrs. Claus and Santa then like restrain her, take her hostage, and talk about how they are making a list. And then they attack her with a knife. Mm-hmm. The therapist also mentions at one point her boyfriend or her daughter and her daughter's good for nothing boyfriend go upstairs. But at what the therapist then tells like Nick and Michelle, Santa and Mrs. Claus, mm-hmm. Tells them, "Oh, my daughter's going to be home soon. Your daughter's already home. We know this already."
Yes, as if they're not professional murderers at this point.
So upstairs, the therapist's daughter is doing a striptease for her boyfriend, but it's not her boyfriend at all. It's Mrs. Claus. And then Santa like appears behind her, grabs her by the throat, starts choking her, and then takes a bite out of her jugular, blood spraying everywhere.
Great effect, by the way. Oh, and also, this gives you another clue, because Jay, as Reddit said, this movie's impossible to figure out. There's no clues as to what's going on. Apparently, they also work for the local police department.
Yeah, the fact that he literally said, I'm making a list and I'm checking it twice.
And we're beginning to see a pattern here, although we don't know it quite yet. But the therapist also says, I did my best to help you, too. And because it turns out she was the therapist in one of the scenes at the flashbacks at the beginning.
Yep. At the funeral for Courtney's dad, the FBI apprehends Mrs. Claus, who just shows up at the funeral, yes. Like dressed like as like a grieving widow.
Yes, that was amazing. And it was so... you could tell that they were going to set it up so she would be caught when she's coming in. And the FBI still seems amazed by this. But the car driving off, well, then they think it's Santa is also a good touch.
Yeah, so there's there's this black Mustang that starts speeding off. They think it's Santa, so they give chase. I think they set up like a roadblock.
Yes.
And they're able to stop it. They approach the car, and it's not Santa in there. It's the therapist. And she has the word nice carved into her forehead before claiming that Santa made her do it.
Yes, and I believe that is because... unlike some of the therapists at the facility, Jay, I think she actually did her job well.
Yeah, I think she was actively trying to help them. And boy, I don't know, one person who, had a connection, we know had a connection to Santa and Mrs. Claus in Jim, Courtney's dad, was killed with the word naughty.
And now written in the snow. And the second person has been spared with the word nice.
And she would have had a chance to talk to the FBI, even though we don't see it. And he mentioned a list that he's checking twice, almost like he's going to find out who's naughty and who's nice.
Yes, and also, even if you didn't know about the list thing, you know his, and she even mentions, the female FBI agent mentions, his MO from last time was a Christmas-themed killing spree.
Yeah, it's boy, I cannot parse what this movie is about.
No, Jay, they didn't give us enough clues. This fucking movie is impossible to figure out.
Back at the church, Santa shows up and attacks the priest, after we get another flashback of Mrs. Claus blowing him at the mental hospital.
Yes.
When the FBI shows up, it's too late. The priest is dead with the word naughty carved into his arm. So also, we have two people dead with naughty and one person with nice, and all three people worked at the mental hospital.
Crazy. But yeah, great kill, by the way. Hitting him in the back with the axe, yep. And finishing him off with the cross.
No, that was great.
I hope you said your prayers.
At the FBI headquarters, Courtney and Jennifer tell them that they aren't safe there because the FBI wasn't safe last time, which is really fucking funny.
Yes.
That's one of my favorite scenes from the first movie where it's either Mitchell or his deputy leaves the FBI doing their research, goes and gets a cup of coffee, and then comes back and everyone's been murdered by Santa and Mrs. Claus. And it's like, you just walked down the hall. You didn't hear any of this?
This is why I love this franchise, Jay.
Trained FBI agents. Don't worry, it happens again, too. FBI agent Parker interrogates Mrs. Claus, and then her partner says that he has someone that she should talk to. Enter Sheriff Mitchell from the first movie.
Oh, and by the way, she's like, I'll go talk to her because she's less likely to play mind games with a woman. And she proceeds to get mind game by Mrs. Claus.
Yep. And this is, I think you and I already said this, but it's real wild to go interview Sheriff Mitchell, the guy who risked dozens of lives in his own town because he couldn't identify a piece of fruit.
Indeed. Or, I mean, even without the piece of fruit, the other million clues he had.
The two people killed at Turtle Dove Lane, all three Frenchians.
Yes. Crazy, right?
The five golden rings cut off all the fingers.
Yep.
Sheriff Mitchell tells Agent Parker that the kills are going to be Christmas related, and he mentions the mental hospital that Nick was kept at.
Yes.
Agent Parker goes to the hospital to investigate, and for a place that burned down 4 years ago, it looks pretty good.
Yeah. Obviously, they contained the fire pretty well.
It's really, they keep talking about how dilapidated and how burned out it is. Not only do all the lights work, there's still an orderly on premises who's like walking around. There's also Christmas decorations put up.
Yes.
And, no burn marks anywhere.
Well, Jay, see, that's the half that was not burned. Okay.
She speaks to the orderly who knew Santa and Mrs. Claus. It is revealed that this is where it is officially revealed that Courtney's dad worked at the mental hospital.
It's revealed to the FBI, even though we've already figured out.
Back at Sheriff Mitchell's house, he calls Agent Parker and is like, "What if it's an actual list? You know, like that song." Once again, for a guy who didn't know the fucking 12 Days of Christmas.
Yes. Suddenly, well, maybe Jay, maybe he was so humiliated and that's why he quit the force and he's devoted his life to learning everything he possibly can about Christmas.
He then gets attacked by Santa, who I guess Santa kind of gets the jump on him at first.
Yeah.
Sheriff Mitchell like pulls out a gun and he's like, you know, calls the cops. He's like, "I shot an intruder." Mm. And then he goes and he pulls the trigger. And oh no, there's no bullets because Santa was already in his house and emptied all the bullets from his revolver.
Well, that's not all he did, Jay.
And then, yeah, he poisoned
his whiskey too. And that the whole thing was just a show, basically. That was one of my favorite Santa lines. He's like, "You were dead 5 minutes ago, Mitchell. I just wanted to watch."
Yep. So then Mitchell, like, falls to the ground, like, gasping for breath, dies from poisoning. And then at one point, Santa's like, "Oh, you have some company." And he goes upstairs, and Mitchell's, like, granddaughter was there. And she's like, "Santa?" Yeah. And, you know, he's like, "Oh, you're a nice little girl." And so, you know, everyone, you know, so then we cut to, like, the FBI showing up. And she's just dancing around the room, like, a bloody, like, mess of a room. But she's fine.
Yes, I was going to say, to note, Santa did not carve anything into her forehead either. Yep. So.
Yeah, she was neither naughty nor nice.
So, at least he does, he seems to have a soft spot for little girls, at least. I'm guessing stemming from his own daughter.
And the fact that he's Santa. Like, Santa doesn't hurt kids.
True. That's true. He did. Although, yes, if the other people he spares, he does carve nice into. So, yeah, he didn't even harm the kid at all. Also, beautiful shot. We talked about it a little bit before we started recording. When Nick is walking up with the blood dripping off his axe.
Oh, it's so good.
Drug through the snow up to Mitchell's place.
It's like three, I think it's Mitchell. Mitchell, like, making his phone call to Agent Parker. Mm-hmm. Agent Parker simultaneously making a phone call to Mitchell.
Yeah.
And then it's just Santa, like, walking through the snow, blood dripping off his axe. Just a great scene.
Yes. Beautifully shot part.
Very reminiscent of towards the end of Silent Night, Deadly Night, when Billy, like, knocks off the head of the snowman with his bloody axe.
Also, I liked the exchange and conversation between him and Mitchell. About how Mitchell's becoming a ruthless killer like him, because he's literally got him on his knees, calls the police before he's even shot him. He's like, "I shot an intruder." And Nick's just like, ha, 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 ha.
We then cut back to the hospital. Santa stabs and strangles the orderly with Christmas lights, yelling, "I made a list and you're on it," and then hangs him with the lights. Well,
and remember, the reason that he kills him is not necessarily because he's on the list, because he spared the therapist. The reason he kills him is because he lied. He's like, "I have a gun." And he's like, "You shouldn't have lied about the gun." And when he's strangling him, because I think he might have let him off with a knife if he hadn't lied to him.
Well, also, I think the orderly implied that, like, he beat.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Like, he's like, the only way to treat these people is to, you know, is to use force.
In a flashback later on, you'll see him with Paul deliver a punch to Mrs. Claus. But yes, honestly, I don't think he was going to be killed up until the point he lied.
Parker arrives at the hospital to find the orderly dead with "naughty" written in blood on the table, and then a bunch of pictures of Jennifer all over the wall. But there's like one section that would be like an A4 sheet of paper, and they're like, "Oh, we need to get forensics here and see if see if the words kind of transposed onto the wall," which is a thing that can happen.
Yes, with direct sunlight on something for long enough, the ink will get like copied onto the wall behind it.
Jennifer and Courtney sneak out to stop living in fear, their quote. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Claus gets an FBI escort because she claims that she ate razor blades. And I don't know, they could have looked at the fact that she's not coughing up blood.
Yes, I think they were probably not wanting to gamble on her dying in their custody, so they were transferring her to a medical facility.
So it's like, I want to say it's like six FBI, like, SUVs.
Yes.
And then an ambulance. And
there's also a green FBI agent who's really nervous about doing this.
And Nick is basically like, they're driving along, and then there's like a stalled car. And Once again, this is the FBI, and it is earlier in the movie, I forgot to mention this, it is stated that Nick and Michelle, Santa and Mrs. Claus, are on the FBI top 10 most wanted list.
Mm-hmm.
So remember that. There's a stalled car, and then they're like, oh, we got to get these cars out of the way. And then Nick steps out, you know, dressed as Santa with a fucking, like, machete and starts hacking out a rope in the middle of the street.
Oh.
And they're like, what's this guy doing? You know, and then it's like, is he dressed as Santa? How does she know that?
Yeah.
You should know what he fucking looks like. You're the FBI. He is on the top 10 most wanted. You're literally transporting his girlfriend. Oh, how does she know he looks like Santa? And then he finally severs the rope, which causes like the trees to like collapse onto the cars, and he starts murdering all the FBI agents.
Great scene. But yeah, I mean, it does seem a little ridiculous that they wouldn't recognize him. But I mean, there was also that famous incident of the cops not recognizing Jeffrey Dahmer literally in the process of killing somebody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could happen.
It's just so funny to me that like literally you are transporting his girlfriend. You know who these people are. And it's like, how does she know he's dressed like Santa?
Well, of
who
course.
Is this guy?
It's also like an old FBI agent who's too busy bullshitting to actually be paying attention, and one that literally just started. So that could also be why that are supposed to be leading this thing.
But yeah, he like murders all the FBI agents. The one is inside, like holding a gun to Mrs. Claus's head. And they, you know, there's a banging on the back of an ambulance, like, because he's hearing all this screaming going on. And then like the door gets pulled open. He starts shooting. Shoots an FBI agent, then Nick gets in and murders him. And
yes, Nick was using his body to knock on the back of the door, basically. Yep.
And then they escape.
Yep. I mean, we all knew it was coming.
Oh, also, this whole killing spree is set to Carol of the Bells, which is really cool.
Yes.
Parker finally determines that the list is for people who were naughty and nice, and it was a corporate Christmas card list for a place called BioCorp that owned the hospital.
Yes. Typical sleazy American healthcare system.
At BioCorp corporate headquarters on Christmas Eve, there is a corporate board meeting going on?
They're talking. I think they said they're having an emergency board meeting because of the big news they've got about them basically buying a U.S. senator who's about to retire and getting a huge contract.
Okay. Is that because I'm like they wouldn't fucking show up for a meeting. Jeff, you and I have had corporate bosses. They take like the whole month of December off.
Yes. I think the only reason they're there is because there's an emergency meeting because of this huge contract they've just landed with the government.
And they're like, it wouldn't have been possible without our lawyer, Nathaniel, who's then like, I gotta go drain the lizard.
Yeah.
So he goes and walks off to go take a leak. Santa then walks up next to him at the urinal, and he starts like mocking Santa, making fun of him. And then Santa just reaches over with a pair of hedge clippers and chops off his dick.
Yep. I love that scene. Probably my favorite kill in the movie. And also, yes, so, I mean, he was totally believable as a corporate lawyer because he's so unnecessarily rude to Nick. And Nick's like, do you work here? And he's like, 32nd floor in the executive bathroom. I don't work here. I'm on the board. And Nick just kind of smiles like, okay, good. So you are the guy on my list.
And then, yeah. And then you just watch him. The dude, like I said, the dude's taking a leak. And you just watch him reach the hedge clippers over. Mm-hmm. And then just snip.
Something got lopped off there, Jay.
They then storm the boardroom. Because like then the head of BioCorp, Paul, is like, oh, where's Nathaniel? Where'd he go? Santa and Mrs. Claus storm into the boardroom and throw his dick on the table. And it's like, that's the only piece of Nick that you'll see, or Nathaniel that you'll see.
Before that happens, Paul is discussing, which it gets to the root of why this entire thing is happening. He's discussing how they've cut costs at all their facilities. And the other executive lady is like, but what about the quality of care for the customers? And he's like, oh, what do you mean customers? I mean, the customer is the government and the insurance company. These people are just a byproduct. And he's like, we just keep our costs as low as possible.
So they storm the boardroom. Mrs. Claus kills the head of security. Mm-hmm. And then basically Nick is like, so what happens if I kill all of you? Well, the shareholders will just appoint a new
board.
Well, what if I leave one of you alive? Well, then that person becomes the CEO. And then he's like, well, then we got to find a new CEO.
Yep.
And it's revealed that one of the guys, I have his name. Hold on. Tom Boland.
Yeah, it's Courtney's uncle.
Yep. He's one of the, he's like, oh, we're missing one of the people on this list. We, you know, I don't have all your names. Where, you know, where's Tom Boland? It's like, oh, he's having an appendectomy.
Yes, he's having his appendix out
on Christmas Eve.
Like, he's like, well, sometimes it can't wait. And he's like, at what hospital? And then he's like, if I give it to you, will you let me live? And he's like, let you live? I mean, all of us. No, you see, Paul just negotiated for himself.
Which and there's one member of the board. Her name's like,
I don't remember what her name is.
Something Thompson, like Marie, yeah. Thompson or something.
Something like that, yeah.
And she's the one that's was the one that Jeff was talking about, where
she's asking questions about how well the patients are actually being cared for, and Paul's just like, it doesn't fucking matter how well the patients are cared for.
And it seems that like Nick has taken a kind of a liking to Marie.
Yeah.
So that he's like, so then basically they go on this rampage killing the entire boardroom.
Well, it's because she's like, I won't beg for my life, you know. If you're gonna kill me, if not, leave.
And he's like, I like you, Marie. you seem nice. And so they go, they murder all the people. You get all of this blood splattering everywhere. You get two things that I think they intended to be funny but kind of land a little flat.
Yeah.
Where there's a it's funnier in retrospect, I think, than it is in the movie. Like a lady comes in to bring coffee and there's blood splattering everywhere and she just turns around and leaves.
Yeah. Like I was telling Jay beforehand, I think that was like she sees that her bosses are getting murdered and she's like, eh, whatever. I'll come back later.
And then there's like a Jay and a Jeff standing outside in the hall talking.
Yep.
And they're like blood splatters on the window and they just ignore it entirely.
But yeah, I mean, honestly, with the way that they've treated everyone that we've seen so far, I would imagine none of the employees would be that broken up about seeing these people murdered.
Mary Thompson, by the way, is her
Mary
name.
Thompson.
I was close with Marie, but so they it cuts back into the boardroom and it's Santa and Mrs. Claus standing there next to Mary Thompson, who's still alive, just covered in blood, looking completely shell-shocked. And it just goes like, Merry Christmas. And they leave.
Yeah. Well, hey, she just got handed the keys to a giant multinational corporation.
Turns out, like we said, Tom Boland is Courtney's uncle, who the girls go to visit at the hospital because the girls have already figured out that it has to do with BioCorp. Yeah. So they're trying to protect, you know, the people that they know. Santa and Mrs. Claus appear at the hospital. It's a great scene where, like, all the power suddenly gets cut, and then, like, it's, like, red lights kind of lighting every room.
Yes, and his room is decorated really cool Christmas-wise, too.
Courtney betrays Jennifer, basically negotiates giving Jennifer over to Santa so she can escape with her life and her uncle's life.
Yes.
Santa agrees and then sends Mrs. Claus after them to give chase. But Courtney and Jennifer had this planned and double-crossed Santa and Mrs. Claus. Basically, Courtney gives Tom a gun and, like, points it at Mrs. Claus, you know, and she's like, hold her, I gotta go save Jennifer. And then Tom just completely fails to use the gun and gets murdered by Mrs. Claus.
He tries, but she should have remembered that he's a desk jockey loser. And Mrs. Claus is like, do you know what a safety catch looks like, baby? Because he's still got the safety on the pistol, and that's why it won't fire, but he doesn't realize that.
That happens. The FBI then arrives, or I guess Agent Parker arrives. She's the only member there.
You're the closest one there, Parker. Don't go in there.
So she arrives at the hospital, finds Tom Boland dead with Naughty carved into his forehead. Agent Parker then arrives in his room where it's, you know, Jennifer holding a gun to her dad's head, basically like threatening to kill him, like put an end to this once and for all.
And he's like, and good, do it.
Yeah. And then Parker's like, no, don't do it. You know, we got to take him alive. We got to, you know.
And then another agent shows up.
And then Jennifer gets shot.
Yes.
And then Nick kind of freaks out and gets arrested. And we kind of fade to black. We come back in. Nick is now sitting in a jail cell. And Agent Parker's talking to him, you know, about we'll catch your, we caught you, now we'll catch your little girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, well, she'll come, you know, she's already been in this cell. She knows her way around. And then we cut back to Agent Parker and Mrs. Claus is standing right behind her. And earlier on, Mrs. Claus, you know, they said something about like, you know, oh, you know, what if I, you know, I'm between you and Nick, like I'm the only thing between you and Nick. Are you the jealous type? And you know, something. And then Mrs. Claus is like, I lied. I am the jealous type, and you're between me and him. And then, like, she pushes Agent Parker forward, and Nick grabs her by the throat. Credits roll. That's the end of the movie.
Well, there's also a weird line from Agent Parker where she's like, oh, big strong man relying on his little girlfriend to come save him. And it's like, have you seen what this woman can do? She's like a stone-cold murderer who's murdered multiple trained FBI agents.
Yeah, like, you guys have murdered countless FBI agents. And it's great. They're in FBI headquarters. He is in FBI custody. And she's murdered at least three agents to get to there, and it's like probably murdered more of them to get to there.
It's like literally the only reason she got captured earlier is so she could learn their patrol patterns and stuff in the building. And it's like, okay, these people have pulled off two massive Christmas killing sprees, and you're really gonna doubt that he has a plan to escape jail? And I love that when he's being held at gunpoint by his daughter, and she's like, we'll put him away. And he's like, I'll just escape again.
That's a great line. Because he's absolutely right. He will.
Yes. It's like, if there's anything they've proven, it's they can get out of anywhere.
But I liked that last scene because it's kind of a flip on the end of the first movie where they have Mrs. Claus arrested.
Yeah.
And Santa escapes, and then he comes and rescues her at the end of the movie. And this one, she comes and rescues him.
Yep.
Anyway, let's get into our categories.
I guess, Jay, if you really want to talk about more categories.
So where do you want to start for this one?
Let's do quotes first.
All right, let's see.
You read out your quotes, Jay, and then I'm going to see how many of the quotes that we picked are the same.
All right. So my quotes are, don't call me Nicholas. My mother called me Nicholas, and I fucking hate my mother.
I did have that, yes.
Santa. Courtney's therapist. To her daughter who just arrived with her idiot boyfriend. I thought you had a double shift. No, I don't have a job. The daughter's boyfriend.
Yes, I did have that as well.
Mrs. Claus, do I strike you as the jealous type? Agent Parker, no, but you strike me as the stupid type.
Yes.
It's just such a dumb line.
I noted that, yes.
And then Nathaniel, the Biocorp lawyer. What did you come as? The ghost of Christmas ass?
Yeah. I did not write that one down, but yes, that was a good one.
Those were my four.
I had a Nathaniel one as well. He said, when Nick asked him if he works there, I'm pissing in the executive bathroom on the 32nd floor. I don't work here. I'm on the board. And before he gets his dick chopped off, of course. I really liked the kill with the priest. when he grabs the cross down, he's like, I hope you said your prayers, Father, and smashes his head in with the cross. What was that? There's one, at the beginning when she's like, here's some money for the kids, because her dad just gave her like a thing of $100 bills, and I think she gives one to him, and he's like, yeah, for the kids.
Old drunk Santa.
And the rest of ours were overlapping, so... Unfortunately, no four birds this time.
Yeah, we don't have that one iconic line that just, or I guess two iconic, because it's also every time 12 Days of Christmas comes on the radio, at one point I'll turn to my wife and I'll be like, all three Frenchins?
Yes. Also, there's the, when they're talking in the boardroom, and he's like, Senator is retiring and joining the board next month. In other news, we have a new massive government healthcare contract to provide services. Those things aren't related at all.
And he winks or laugh. Something.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Well, let's
talk about the Christmas spirit of it all, Jay. All right,
let's do Christmas spirit. How Christmassy is the movie? How Christmassy are the kills? There is Christmas stuff in every scene.
Yes, pretty damn Christmassy.
It's not, you know, I wouldn't say it's like the over the top, like the, you know, the stuff that you and I have praised, like Black Christmas 2006. Yes,
it's not overbearing in the scenes, but it is a part of the movie. Like, it doesn't feel like it's just on there to make this like, oh, it's a Christmas slasher to score points or whatever. It's like actually woven into the plot. And obviously the kills are very Christmas themed because it's literally they're checking off a list.
Yeah, they're they're making a list, checking it twice, going to see who's naughty and who's nice.
Yes. So again, the Christmas themed killing is as solid as the first one.
And it's Santa and Mrs. Claus. And also Santa uses the most Christmassy weapon of all, an axe.
Of course. Yes, Jay Logsdon's Christmas-approved weapon, yep. The axe, which all killer Santas seem to gravitate towards.
I mean, certainly seems like it.
But, like I said, the only thing I can think of is it must be because, you know, you use an axe to cut down the Christmas tree.
Mm.
So I'm guessing that's what it's referencing. But a lot of people probably don't get that now that we use artificial trees.
I will say, for an abandoned, but my favorite thing is for the abandoned and burned down mental hospital, even it has Christmas decorations set up.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, I was thinking that at the time, it's like, okay, so this one guy just is like the groundskeeper for this place to keep kids from smoking there and shit. And it's like, so what did he decorate for himself?
They're like, it's a very elaborately decorated like Christmas tree.
I don't know, maybe he gets bored on these long shifts.
And like lights are like strung up in the hallway and stuff.
But her uncle's room, it has its own Christmas tree presents. He's got garland wrapped around his whole bed with lights on the ceiling and everything. Like somebody went all out for his Christmas stay in the hospital.
Well, like you back to the mental hospital, like you said, like that orderly's there by himself, but you know, to like you said, to make sure, you know, kids don't come and smoke pot on the premises. And he goes, like, but he somehow misses the room that Nick is held up in,
yeah,
with, you know, all the pictures of Jennifer on the wall. Just ignores that room on his rounds every single night. Oh, I'm sure it's fine.
Well, Jay, you know why he doesn't want kids smoking pot there? Because he's smoking pot.
Hey, good call, dude. Christmas wrapping, set designs, costumes, effects, etc.
Nicholas still looks amazing. I'd say, honestly, his scar looks better than it did in the first movie.
I love the, like, the blood stains on the Santa suit and stuff, I think, are, get, you know, get more and more of them.
Yes, a lot of practical blood effects in this one, which I really appreciated, especially the effects they added to the sets to show how much damage had been done. Like, when they walk into that, even just at the end, when their two guys are laying down there and you can see the blood is, like, starting to run down towards the cell. But yeah, like, in the church where the priest's blood has started to pool around the front of the pews when they're investigating his death. I mean, and the way that they did the effect when he carves naughty or nice into people's forehead, that looked really good.
I was going to shout that out. I loved the, like, how good that looked.
And like we said, the asylum looked good Christmas decoration-wise, even though, yeah, it was supposed to be burned down.
Apparently I would say that's the one thing for the for the set design. For a burned-down asylum, it sure looked fully standing and fine.
Yes, it looks really nice for a burned-down building. I talked at the beginning. I really like that opening drone shot of the Statue of Liberty as the Christmas music plays over it.
And we get a couple other shot, like aerial shots, probably, yes, also done with a drone.
As the snow flies.
Yep, and like of like deserted roads and stuff, mm-hmm, like that. All looks great.
Yes, like the upstate New York snowy landscape shots were really nice to add to the Christmas feel. And yeah, I honestly, that's one of the reasons I love that drones have become a lot more cheap and available, because you can get a lower budget movie like this sweeping shots you used to only be able to get from a helicopter that would cost millions to run.
I liked Courtney's hair.
Yeah, no, she
had like pink highlights. Yeah, it looked really good.
Her blonde and pink dye job looked pretty good. I liked the. Sheriff Mitchell looked like a rundown alcoholic retired cop. He, like, even the way he dresses off duty or whatever makes screams cop to me.
At one point, so Agent Parker arrives and she's like, Sheriff Mitchell. He's like, just call me Mitchell now, because they never gave him a first name in the original movie.
Which is great, by the way.
And then when he calls the cops, he's like, it's Sheriff, or it's Mitchell.
He's our Agent Manners.
Oh, man. I don't... Sheriff Mitchell and Agent Manners. Now that's the movie we need.
Yeah. Oh my God. Can you imagine a crossover where Jack Frost and Four Bird Santa are trying to kill the same guy?
Oh, like a Freddy versus Jason. Yes. Oh my God. What a movie.
Because, I mean, it's been established that he is like, if not, he's even a little bit beyond like peak human capability, because he was literally shot in the last movie and shrugged it off. And it seemed, I don't know if it was just like, because it seemed like his scar is like very slowly healing, because in the flashbacks it looks much, much worse than it does in, mm-hmm, the modern stuff. So I wonder if he's got like a Michael Myers style regeneration type thing going on.
I mean, he might.
Because he seems to recover from injuries really easily.
From those American military experiments that were done to him. I don't know, maybe we'll learn about in the third movie.
In the third movie, I mean, he was already established as a Special Forces veteran in the first movie. So yeah, he could have had King of the Hill reference. He was a test subject in Operation Infinite Walrus.
Oh, well, that'd be great. What a twist. Eat your heart out, M. Night Shyamalan.
Turns out that's what made him insane, were these experiments.
Well, let's...
Oh, okay, we're writing the third movie now, so let's move on to the next category. Simon Phillips, contact us.
Yeah, Simon, get in touch. We want to make this third movie happen.
Yes.
Well, let's move on. Let's talk about something we didn't like. Broken Bulb.
All right. Honestly, the thing I disliked the most about this was the fact that they cut a little bit of the humor out of it, I think, in comparison to the first one. This one was more of a straight kind of... Honestly, this movie had a more interesting like murder spree and serial killer team than Long Legs did for me. I wish Long Legs had been this entertaining.
Oh, man.
As a story, but... Yeah, I felt it was a little darker in tone, which I guess, like all great middle sequels in a trilogy like Empire Strikes Back, this one's darker than the first one.
That's fair.
But yeah, I kind of missed, because it seems like he's got a more serious, because of the events of the last movie, he has a more serious attitude this time around than he did the last time. He seemed like he was having more fun last time.
I completely agree. This movie feels like it's like trying to be a little bit more serious, like they almost realized how kind of stupid the first movie was. And they're like, oh, we got to make it more serious. And it's like, no, that kind of takes some of the fun out of the movie.
It still works. It's still a good movie, but it is not as much of a fun movie as Once Upon a Time at Christmas.
That brings us on to Brilliant Bulb. For me, it's that thing I've said multiple times. Somehow a sequel is both, I mean, it keeps the same level. It's at the exact same level as the first movie. A thing we said about Jack Frost too. Mm-hmm. At the exact same level. But somehow this movie is both better and worse than the original movie, which is incredibly impressive.
Yes, I agree. Yes, my Brilliant Bulb was praising the performances and praising the creative team behind the movie, because this, you would never guess that they made this for $1 million if you looked at it. It's got so many, I mean, just the level of people involved in some of the scenes where you have like the whole police force taking out the drunk driving accident at the beginning, or the FBI field team moving Mrs. Claus. They had like 6 vehicles, like we said, and agents in all of them. Yes, they used the drone or whatever, but they used, like, I really appreciated, like we're calling in a helicopter to try and spot him on the road, and they used the drone or whatever and cut in, like, chopper noise, so it's kind of like you're seeing out of the helicopter.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good way to work around not having to rent a super expensive-ass helicopter.
No, it's really impressive, like, what they did with such a small budget.
Yes, that's like, that's why I have faith that the third one will happen. It's just, maybe it's just taking longer than they thought it would.
Who knows? I don't know if I mentioned it on the show. I talked to Matt. I reached out to him about it, and he said he was supposed to like attend one of the days of filming, but hasn't heard anything. So maybe I'll check back in with him and see if he has an update, and I can provide it if I hear anything different.
Well, as I say, Santa was on The Witcher last year, I believe.
Oh,
so he was a bandit. I think he gets murdered, but
or maybe the next time Matt's on when we talk about Dial Code Santa Claus, maybe then we can.
Yes. Yeah, I do. I need to discuss several things with Matt the next time he's on, Jay.
All right, well, let's move on to our final rating. Every episode of Horror for the Holidays, we rate the movie we watched off of one of 3 categories. Is it ho-ho-ho-larious? Is it seasonally scary? Or is it you'll be sorry? Jeff, take us away.
Well, I was kind of torn, because like I said, this is a more serious movie, and it is a pretty, like I said, it's a pretty good murder mystery movie. It's kind of like in that 7 Silence of the Lambs, I guess now Long Legs vein of, you know, trying to figure out why these people are doing these murders in the way that they're doing. But at the end of the day, I think it still falls into ho-ho-ho-larious for me, because while it does take itself seriously at some points, you also get glimmers of that first movie goofiness throughout, like the boardroom scene we talked about, and the FBI being completely incompetent.
The FBI somehow being more incompetent than the local sheriff's department.
Who doesn't know the difference between an apple and a pear.
Yes. They have to go to him for help. I want to reiterate that as many times as possible.
Honestly, I think, though, depending on how freaked out you are by Psychotic Killer, because that's the thing, too. I don't see movies like Long Legs, Silence of the Lambs, Seven, things in that vein. I don't really see those as horror movies. I see those more as thrillers, because a murderer does not really make me super scared. But, I mean, if you're really someone who's really scared of that, this could be a seasonally scary for you, because there's, especially with Simon Phillips' performance, there are some genuinely scary moments of him, like, murdering people. And acting like a psycho.
Yeah.
But yeah, ho-ho-hilarious for me.
I agree. Ho-ho-hilarious. This is the exact same kind of dumb, goofy fun as the first movie. This is the movie that, you know, once again, you pull out Once Upon a Time at Christmas, or you pull it up, you have some friends over. Let's watch this movie. I've heard it's so stupid. Like, it's so bad, it's good. I've recommended the first movie to people as so bad, it's good. Mm-hmm. This is the exact same. Like, watch them back to back, or, you know, watch them, you know, close together. Like, it is absolutely worth your time, because, you know, they take the movie seriously, but because they're taking it so seriously, it just makes it more silly and fun.
Yes, I agree. And hopefully someday we'll be talking about the third one.
Oh, fingers crossed.
And someday after that, the fourth one.
Four films.
That's it. I'm emailing Simon Phillips. I need to know about this production.
Do it. Get on it, Jeff.
Tell him four movies is enough for one franchise.
All right. Well, let's take our Santa and Mrs. Claus and see if we can move out. You know, this is the type of situation where I wish we actually knew what our naughty list was, because I don't remember where we had them last time.
You just got on the naughty list, bitch!
Ah, there's another Santa.
Yes. So, Jay, we put him at peak of human killer Santas.
I think we said pre, like, Thorn Michael Myers stuff, right?
Yes, because he's not... As far as we know, there's nothing supernatural about him, but he seems to be, like, at that, like, peak, you know, like, Captain America-level physical condition where he can shrug off things that a normal person would be down by. He seems to be very strong and agile, and, like, he seems to have no problem killing people with any number of weapons. And that's obviously, he has military training or whatever, so he's a step above most murderers in these movies. But, yeah, I think... This version doesn't do anything like crazily out of line with the last one, so I'm pretty sure he's probably just going to stay at peak of human killer Santas for me.
I think we can probably say that. That works for me. Yes,
there's no other human killer Santa I think could take him. Like, Billy might be close, just because Billy has, like, that psychotic rage and no emotion. But I think Four-Bird Santa could probably still take him.
Yeah, I agree, you're right. I mean, certainly in a handsomeness contest, Billy wins.
Well,
but
I mean, obviously. I don't know, though. Four-Bird Santa is pretty stylish, Jay. But yeah, with Billy having, like, no formal combat training or anything, I think Four-Bird Santa still has to be at the top.
Oh, speaking of Robert Brian Wilson, I don't think... I shared on social media, but I didn't mention on the podcast. I did go out and meet Linnea Quigley. You know this, Jeff.
Yes, I did.
She was an absolute sweetheart. I just wanted to put that on the show. Just shout out Linnea. And she was, when I pulled out my copy of Silent Night, Deadly Night, already signed by Robert Brian Wilson, she was like, oh, you got Robert to sign it? And I was like, yeah, he was really nice. She's like, oh, he's such a nice guy. Like, it was a really kind of sweet moment. Linnea was great.
I'm glad you had a good experience with that, Jay.
All right, anyway, it's time to do a little segment we like to call...
Garbage day.
Huh? No. All right. Well, this message comes to us from my friend Robert. He listens to the show. Shout out, Robert.
Yes. Is he the one who lets us know when the episode doesn't upload? Right.
Yes, he is.
Yes. Thank you for that, Robert.
In a group chat, we were talking about, like, the Robert Downey Jr. Dr. Doom reveal. Yes. And then he messaged me. He was like, that does remind me that I also wanted to ask Jay if Jeff had any thoughts on Red Hulk being in the new Captain America movie.
I have interesting thoughts about this. I'm glad someone finally asked me to talk about Hulks, Jay. Red Hulk is my second favorite Hulk, I would say. A-Bomb can be interesting depending on who's writing him, but he's, I don't know if he really counts as a Hulk. But yes, Thunderbolt Ross is Red Hulk, which we're getting because Harrison Ford has replaced the late actor that was being built up for, what, 15 years
to be Red Hulk, in the background, yeah.
To be Red Hulk. Tough luck about that. Dying this close to the finish line.
That it's Harrison Ford, a guy who literally doesn't want to work at all.
Well, and that's the thing that it's like, how much money did Disney give him? Because he actually seems like enthusiastic in the trailer. And did you see his Comic-Con appearance? Yes, he actually did a mimed Hulk out on stage and revealed a red t-shirt underneath. And I was like, okay, so how much are they paying Harrison Ford to act this way? Because
maybe Harrison Ford's secretly been a big, like, comic book fan for years.
Well, see, his thing was, oh, you know, I'm just working with so many great people, and I've seen so many people be so successful in the MCU, which to me means he's like, I've seen so many people who are nobodies make a shitload of money in this, and I'm already an established actor that everyone loves, so I'm probably going to make, like, Robert Downey Jr. levels of money at this, so that could be why he's so excited.
Hey, I mean, good for him.
But, I mean, honestly, I really like the scene of him at the end of the trailer catching and throwing down Captain America's shield. I'm guessing it's probably from whoever blew up the White House, probably triggered his transformation involuntarily, because the Red Hulk generally has control over his transformations.
Yeah.
But when it's like every other Hulk, if he's super stressed or in danger of dying, he will Hulk out involuntarily.
Do we want to take You and I and a couple friends went and saw Deadpool and Wolverine. Do we want to take a couple minutes to talk about that?
Yeah, we might as well.
What were your thoughts?
Really good. I don't think it will probably be the last one, just because it's already made like $600 million in one weekend. And as Deadpool says, he says it in the trailer, so this isn't really a spoiler. Hugh Jackman's going to be doing this till he's 90.
I'm not a huge Deadpool fan. He's far from my favorite comic book character. Mm-hmm. I think assholes dress up as Deadpool at Comic-Cons to act like assholes at Comic-Cons. I think that's the whole point. I'm not a big Deadpool fan. This was the best movie of the three, hands down, for me. I legitimately enjoyed and laughed at so many parts of this movie.
Yes.
I drive a Honda Odyssey, so there was a lot of laughing during a certain section of this movie.
If you know, you know.
But I was sitting there afterwards, and I was like, man, why did I like this movie so much? And there's spoiler alert. Spoilers if you haven't seen Deadpool and Wolverine and you want to go in blind. Skip ahead, I don't know, a couple minutes. There's basically a bunch of the old Marvel movie people show up. Yes. Jennifer Garner.
The pre-MCU Marvel heroes.
Wesley Snipes. Channing Tatum as Gambit.
Yes, from X-Men Origins Wolverine.
They all show up, and so there's a bunch of jokes about them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I was sitting there, and I was like, why did I enjoy this movie so much? So much more than I've enjoyed like some of the other Deadpool movies and certainly some of the more recent Marvel movies.
Mm.
And it hit me. I was like, oh, because that movie was Grant Morrison's Animal Man with like Deadpool MCU stuff slapped on top of it. if you've read Grant Morrison's Animal Man, there is a scene where towards the end of the run, I think it's the last couple issues, Animal Man goes to comic book limbo. Mm-hmm. And meets like characters that haven't appeared in books in years. This is their first appearance in years. Meets like the old Mr. Freeze before they made him like Victor Freeze, the scientist.
Mm-hmm.
Like meets all these like classic DC characters that we haven't seen in forever because he goes to limbo to then confront his writer, who is Grant Morrison. And then they have a discussion about it. It's a fantastic read. Grant Morrison's probably top two, top three favorite comic book writers for me. Certainly Grant Morrison and Walt Simonson are certainly probably top two. And
don't forget about Alan Moore.
Maybe James Tynion the fourth, simply because I like the Deviant so goddamn much. But those two are certainly my top two. And so I love Grant Morrison, and this is just literally what I just described is essentially what happens in Deadpool and Wolverine. Like, even down to, instead of going to confront the writer, they go to confront Cassandra Nova, who is a character who was created by Grant Morrison.
Yes.
So like, I don't know. So that was the moment where I went, oh no, it's the end of Animal Man. Like, that's what this is.
Really solid. All the performances were great. Hugh Jackman still has it as Wolverine. He's He said that Deadpool 2 came out literally 3 days after his retirement, and he was like, oh, God, because Ryan Reynolds discusses wanting to do a movie with Wolverine and bitching about how Wolverine's death in Logan has now overshadowed his movie.
Also, but, man, that big fight scene to Like a Prayer,
yes,
is, oh, I was still thinking about how much fun that scene was.
And I mean, as men who have our own dog pools, we also appreciated Dog Pool.
Yeah, Dog Pool was great. Oh man, what a movie. Jeff, the Game Master's showing up.
Oh no, I knew this was gonna happen. If there's no snacks, the Game Master appears.
Jeff, fuck Mary Kilmas. Bill Goldberg Santa. This is a movie about that. We just watched a movie with a killer Santa. Bill Goldberg Santa. Satan Claus. Storm and Norman. George Buza from A Christmas Horror Story. You gotta fuck one, you gotta marry one, you gotta kill Miss one. Fuck Mary Kilmas.
This is hard. All right, give it to me again so I can think about this.
Bill Goldberg Santa from Santa's Sleigh. Satan Claus, Storm and Norman.
All right. Fuck Storm and Norman. Kill Goldberg Santa and marry Satan Claus.
You know, I agree. Kill Goldberg Santa. I mean, you know, as Bret Hart would say, fuck Bill Goldberg. I think I would marry Storm and Norman and fuck Satan Claus, but I'm right there with you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know, there's dangers either way, because yes, Satan Claus is the devil, of course, but I mean, Storm and Norman also goes insane and murders everyone in a mall, so.
Oh, man. I don't know.
it's hard to say. I mean, there would have to be advantages to being married to the devil, Jay.
Yeah, that's a good point. You raise a good point. Maybe I change mine. I think you got the right idea. All those magic powers and making people's ears bleed and whatever else happened in Letters to Satan Claus. Yeah,
what a movie.
Oh man, we've had. I know we did this on our last main episode. We've had so many fun movies on this show.
We've had some classics we didn't even know were out there.
But. Well. If you want to send us an email for our Garbage Day segment, get in touch with us, horrorfortheholidays@gmail.com. Leave us a comment on the YouTube video at Horror for the Holidays.
Yes, Horror for the Holidays, youtube.com/horrorfortheholidays. Hit subscribe, hit the bell, like the video. Yes, leave us comments. That's one of the easiest places for us to interact with people who want to talk about the episode. So YouTube comments or Apple comments are the best places.
And get in touch with us on social media. At Horror the Number 4 Holidays, we're all the places. TikTok, Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads, Twitter, now known as X.
Yes. All the social media you love and all the social medias that will be forgotten in 5 months.
Yep. Oh man, it'd be nice if they all just disappeared. I mean, I like social media, but man, it'd be great if they all disappeared.
Yeah, I honestly don't like what it's done to, I mean, Reddit itself has been a blight on my existence, Jay.
Well, on Reddit is, as people have like left Twitter, Reddit has become Twitter.
Mm-hmm. No, Jay, what you fail to see is these movies are terrible, and they have a 3.5 on IMDb, but they should really have a 0.5, Jay, because the plots make no sense, and because apparently we also work for local police departments and can't recognize free.
Subscribe on your podcaster of choice. Leave us 5 stars, especially if you think we do a bad job. Leave us 5 stars. Yes. We read the reviews of the 5 stars. Those are the only ones we pay attention to.
I think we're going to waste our time reading a 1-star review.
Yeah, fuck anyone who left a 1-star review. I don't think we actually have any 1-star reviews. But
you know what? If we do get some, they're going on the fuck Mary Kilmas list.
Yeah, we'll find their names. We'll be like, all right, this asshole said this.
Yes, we'll see. Your degrees of comment will determine your space on the list.
Tell a friend. Certainly, yes, that's
what helps the most.
Yeah, that's the best way to spread word about this podcast and help us kind of build a community where we can like and discuss and talk about Christmas horror movies. Because I mean, it's slowly but surely there's one building up. But it's nice to have more and more people get involved with this.
Yes, indeed. Also, go check out our discussion of Long Legs. Apparently no one cares about Long Legs, Jay.
I mean, they're probably right.
It's appropriate that they don't, but still.
Oh, also, we've had 2 episodes since this happened, but we did get, not like picked up by the like the Christmas Podcast Network.
Added to it.
Yeah, we got added to it. I'd reached out to them a while ago and hadn't heard anything, so I was like, they probably don't think we're Christmassy enough. And then they got back to us, and so now we kind of get promoted by them and have had some discussions with them, and hopefully we'll have some of them appearing on our show, and we'll be appearing on some of their shows soon. So.
Indeed. Also, I just want to remind the audience that I have an M3GAN dancing magnet, and you do not.
Oh my god, it's so good.
Be jealous.
Well, other than that, thanks for listening. We'll see you with a stocking stuffer in a week.
Who knows, Jay? It could be discussing a certain experience.
I hope not. Bye.